Welcome to Main Street on member-supported Prairie Public. As Election Day approaches on Tuesday, November 5th, we're here to ensure you're fully informed about the issues that impact your life. Our goal is to help you get to know the candidates, the people seeking your vote, and to understand the voices shaping your perspective on the Measure 4 ballot initiative. If you missed our recent candidate debate or last week's discussion on Measure 4, this week, Main Street will be your chance to catch up. Today, we're airing the debate on Measure 4, a voter initiative aimed at eliminating property taxes in North Dakota. Former legislator Dr. Rick Becker argued in favor of the measure, while Aaron Burst from the North Dakota Association of Counties argued against it. I moderated the debate that originally aired on October 23rd. Today, we are hosting a debate about Measure 4 that's on the election ballot this year in North Dakota. So what is Measure 4? If passed, the measure would prohibit North Dakota political subdivisions from levying property taxes after 2024, except to pay off existing debt. The state would provide replacement funding based on 2024 property levels, and new limits would be placed on local government debt with specific exemptions for water and sewer projects. Joining us today for the debate are Dr. Rick Becker, former state representative and supporter of Measure 4. Dr. Becker, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you.
And Mr. Aaron Burst, executive director of the North Dakota Association of Counties, and he opposes the measure. Mr. Burst, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have this discussion, gentlemen. Thank you both for being here. Both guests have agreed to the debate format. I will pose a question, and then each participant will have 1 minute and 30 seconds to respond. The person who answers first will also have an optional 30 seconds for a rebuttal. And we'll rotate who answers each question first. At the end of the debate, each guest will have 2 minutes for a closing statement. So if our guests are ready, let's begin. Mr. Burst, you'll answer the first question. Measure 4, if passed, requires the state to reimburse political subdivisions at 2024 levels indefinitely. Is that a good idea?
Well, thanks again. First, I want to start by thanking you, Craig, for having us on, and you, Dr. Becker, for letting us sit here and have this debate. Tax policy is always very complicated and nuanced, but I'm very much appreciative of Dr. Becker and the folks that are trying to engage on the tax policy. What I would say is, again, my members do not support this, or the vast, vast majority of my members do not support this. And the large part is because after the 2024 dollars that get expended, there's real questions on what happens in 2025 and 26 and 27 and forever. So since we're talking about property tax, which funds local city services, county services, school services, there's concern that we don't know what the result will be and unexpected consequences could happen.
Well, yes, I think actually it is a very good idea to have the state replace at a specific level. And what's important to know about that is it doesn't require the state to replace at 2024 levels. It actually says that the state must replace no less than 2024 levels. So that leaves open the possibility that if the state legislature wants to put in an inflator or accelerator, whatever you'd like to call it, they have that option. So there's nothing frozen in the Constitution, as sometimes people say. The reason it's important is that we, in addition to the reform that this measure provides, reforming how we do local taxation, moving away from valuations, which people dislike a great deal, and from mill levies, which people do not understand, in addition to reforming that, which alone is substantial, it is giving tax relief, something the legislature has promised us for 12 years and has not delivered. With the tremendous amount of revenue that the state has coming in consistently for the last 12 to 15 years, and we know will continue to come in for the next several decades, it's very important that we allow that newfound wealth in North Dakota, blessed with the natural resources we have, that we're able to transfer that money into the pockets, kept in the pockets of the average North Dakota citizen. So having the state replace at a specific amount, no less than that amount, is a great way to afford that tax relief.
30 seconds for a rebuttal, Mr. Burst.
I would say that's, again, goes to the point of the concern is the legislature could and maybe would give more money to local subdivisions than the 2024 levels, but that would still require the local subdivisions to go to the legislature and ask for that, as opposed to just making the financial decision based on their end currently.
All right, let's move on to the next question. Dr. Becker, you'll answer this first. It's been argued that local governments and political subdivisions will lose control if Measure 4 passes.
Is that true?
It's actually not true. The locals are very bound in by current law with the property tax laws. If you talk to city and county commissioners, you'll hear how they very frequently feel boxed in, forced to levy a certain amount of mills so that they don't lose various state funding, forced to go with valuations, otherwise the state equalization board will come in and correct it, if you will. And they, when people are complaining about property taxes, the locals point their fingers at the state legislature. The state legislature points their fingers at the locals. So they don't have a lot of control right now. The reason I'm able to say with a straight face and with all sincerity that they will have greater control is because we will move from from the valuation-based property tax to a new form. So when people talk about, well, we're losing the funding from property tax, we are not losing a dollar of funding. What we are doing is changing the method of funding. And when we change that method, we move away from the valuations, the mill levies, which has pages and pages of restrictions put on the locals by the state. We open it up. Instead of a one-size-fits-all, the cities and counties are able to tailor the form of taxation to best suit the needs of the people in their community. So Fargo probably is going to look very much different than, say, Velva on how they do taxation. And so this opens it up. It's an opportunity for locals to decide what works best for them. Not a dollar is lost in funding. They control their budgets 100%. The state has nothing to do with their budgets, and they don't need to come begging to Bismarck for money because they have the control to raise that revenue.
Mr. Burst?
Yeah, well, I guess that's where Dr. Becker and I will disagree. Again, the measure is pretty clear that the 2024 levels will be in reimbursed. But as I mentioned, there has to be additional growth. No budget is going to stay zero. There has to be a way to find more money going forward than 2024. And as Dr. Becker indicated, yes, the legislature could give more, but I don't know where you find that extra money. Either the legislature comes up with it, or as I've heard them, the supporters of Measure 4 say, there's a new way of coming up with those dollars. But there's no way a political subdivision can create a new taxation mechanism without first going to the state. So the state would have to authorize whatever this new thing is. And maybe they would, but because we don't know what they're going to use, we have to say we're not really sure what the plan is until we get to the legislative session, and then we're going to have to figure out how to do it. And that would be very difficult.
Dr. Becker, additional 30 seconds here.
Right. So I think Aaron underscores exactly what I'm saying. There is more control because we're not relying on the state for those additional funds. We are saying the locals should be in control of their budget, raise the revenue they need by these new methods. And yes, indeed, the legislature will need to change in these next few months, 2025, they'll need to change the language. The only thing that prevents the locals from being able to raise the revenue they need is how it's worded right now in the Century Code. One bill introduced into this coming session will change it, will take the handcuffs off the locals, and they'll be able to raise the revenue they need unrestricted.
All right, let's move on, gentlemen. This question will be for Mr. Burst first. Is property tax a fair way to tax citizens?
Well, I don't know if there's any taxation that is perfect or fair, and fair is always in the eyes of the beholder, right? I've said this jokingly before, but the only tax, and I've been looking at tax policy for 25 years, the only tax policy that people like is the one somebody else pays. People like the services, but you have to figure out a way to pay for it. And you don't have to take my word for this too. The Tax Foundation was clear that property tax is a fair tax in terms of it delivers local services. If I'm paying property tax in Bismarck, I don't have to worry about that money going down to Fargo or Cass County. It stays here to my local teacher or my local firefighter. And so from that perspective, I think it is fair.
Dr. Becker?
Yeah, no, there are many things that are unfair about it. First off, we can take a look at the simple aspect of what we are paying for with property tax, the services we receive. And if we can look and say, okay, I receive a certain value for fire and for police. Now, am I getting 10 times more value if my house is valued at 10 times more? The other thing is if we're talking sidewalks, snow removal, and so forth, if I have a road frontage of 25 feet and my neighbor has one of 500 feet, is it fair that I'm paying the same as this other person? So there are inherent unfair aspects to it. But I think more importantly, what's unfair are valuations. you will not even necessarily improve your home, but you will be taxed on what the value is, over which you have no control, and it's really a tax on unrealized gains. That's what a valuation property tax is. The same thing Kamala Harris is proposing for the economy going forward is a tax on unrealized gains. That is inherently unfair. Another thing that's unfair is mill levies. Nobody understands this is one of the three biggest taxes you will ever pay. It's the only tax that will possibly take your home away from you. And yet we don't understand how it works. How can we defend ourselves? How can we question things when we don't understand it? The last thing I'd say is unfair about is no matter what anyone says, how can it possibly be fair that someone on a fixed income could be forced out of their home because they can't pay increasing property taxes?
30 more seconds, Mr. Burst.
Yeah, I would just respond to that in terms of the forced out of the home. There's plenty of ways that you can address that without changing the whole structure. Legislature has gave the homestead exemption for those 65. The legislature has given the primary credit coming up. There are ways to address this. If you don't like the door, you don't burn down the house.
All right, we'll move on. Dr. Becker, you'll answer this question first. Both sides in this debate have pointed out that there's been misinformation circulating about Measure 4. What are some of the common myths or misconceptions you've encountered, and how would you like to set that record straight today?
Well, there have been innumerable misstatements, I'll say, by the opposition. I've heard that the schools are going to lose up to 40% of their funding because they say, well, currently 40% of education is funded with property taxes. So if we do away with property taxes, they could lose 40%. And if that happens, you have to close down schools. That's just a 100% misstatement. It says right in the measure, every dollar must be replaced. And we know that the locals will be able to raise the revenue they need above that amount. So there's no loss of funding. We've heard that if this happens, Medicaid is going to be cut. There's no evidence. In fact, we don't even know the mechanism you could cut Medicaid, yet that's what's being whispered in the ears of hospital executives so that they tell their employees that this could possibly happen. Fire chiefs are told, you know what, if you want a new fire truck, you're going to have to hold a pancake breakfast benefit to pay for a fire truck. It is nothing but fear-mongering. The opposition, in general, will say what the scariest thing they can think of to whatever their audience might be. It's to seniors, you're going to lose Meals on Wheels. To small schools, it's going to be you're going to close. To health people, it's that we're going to lose Medicaid funding. No matter what it is, it's scare. We're going to lose. And it's not ever talking about the opportunity that this prince presents to North Dakota.
Mr. Burst?
Well, I guess I can't comment on what other people say. I can only comment on what I say. What I would say is the misinformation, I guess, is that this would be an easy fix if this were to pass. Again, I've heard you only need a few bills to fix this and make the legislature come in and give the locals some extra authority, but that is not easy.
30 more seconds. Dr. Becker?
Well, yeah, I agree. It's not easy, but it's what we elect these people to do. And we have an opportunity in North Dakota, and I think we should take it. And instead of fear-mongering, we should recognize the opportunity that this will present, incentivizing young families to move to North Dakota, incentivizing businesses. Instead of favoring Fargo, Bismarck, Grand Forks with incentivizing, this creates an incentivization location for the entire state, no matter how small the town might be.
Moving on, this question is for Mr. Burst first. Are there opportunities for property tax reform instead of repealing property taxes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know a lot of people think that there hasn't been reform processes, and you can always argue that there should be more. But going back to the social services on the county side, that was 20 mills that used to be on people's tax statements that was just completely removed when the state took that over. That was a significant difference, and you can see that on your own statements if you go back and pull them up. No matter whether you're a businessman or any property owner, that made a difference. Will the legislature go farther? Yeah, I believe there's a ton of reforms we could still do. Bond issues should only be on a primary or general election. They shouldn't be on a special election. You can do better with the homestead credit. You can do better with transferring some services to the state. That makes sense. So there are ways to reform the property tax system. But again, just throwing the whole system out, hoping the legislature comes up with a better idea is what my members feel is difficult.
Dr. Becker?
Well, reform is a great idea if you're actually on board with it. The problem is that most, if not all, of the opposition members have been opposed to reform, the significant reforms. There have been, since the last measure in 2012 failed and we were promised reform, there have been 20 significant reform bills brought forth and introduced in the legislature, and they all died. Many of them passed the House, but if they went that far, they certainly died in the Senate. And nearly every single one was opposed by these opposition members. So they say now, hey, we're interested in reform. This is too much. This is a sledgehammer approach. We're all in favor of reform. Really, were you? Because in the last session, we had significant reform bills, including elimination of primary residence tax, including paying for K-12 education, that portion of the property tax. We've had other measures that would have capped valuations. We had measures that would have capped overall property tax increases without a vote of the people. We've had measures that would freeze property tax for people over 65 or if they're disabled. The opposition members have been against every one of these reforms. They promised us, hey, in 2012, if you vote this down, we're going to get you reform. It didn't happen. We have a basically Groundhog Day. Now we're doing it again. We hear the same group. It's the same name, the same chairman, the same scare tactics, the same promises. And those promises are not going to come through. If they would come through, they would have come in 2023 when they knew. Late Senator Doug Larson said, if we don't pass major reform, there will be an initiated measure. We will not have control of it. And now that's where we're at.
Thank you, Dr. Becker. Mr. Burst, 30 more seconds.
Again, I don't know what to tell you, but there has been major reform. The social services was 20 mils off of everybody's taxes. We brought that forward. We suggested it. The state funded it. It made a difference. There have been numerous efforts. And so the memory of what was good, it might not have been what Dr. Becker wanted, but there have been numerous things to keep a cap on property taxes.
Moving on, this question is for Dr. Becker first. Dr. Becker, what's the position of senior citizen advocacy groups on Measure 4, and how might it affect their tax burdens or others on fixed income?
The position of senior citizens advocacy groups, I only know of AARP, who is opposed to it. I don't know of any other groups for or against it. To my position, this is only beneficial to seniors. And it's true. What Aaron said is absolutely true. There's a homestead exemption, and the legislature increased it recently so that it will pay a portion or possibly even all of your property tax, depending on the value of your home, so long as you don't make over a certain amount of money, whether it's passive or active income. Nevertheless, we're still stuck with a great big donut hole of people that don't quite fall under that threshold, who are still on a fixed income, who are in homes where, for instance, in Horace, where I believe you're from, the valuations are skyrocketing. They're still living in the same home they have for 30 years. But how can they possibly afford those increased valuations? So there's no big melodramatic thing where the sheriff is kicking them out and putting yellow tape across the door. What's happening is they're saying, gosh, you know what, sweetheart? We can't afford to stay here anymore. We're going to have to downsize. We're going to have to move to a condo in Fargo or wherever else. And that is a terrible, I think, unethical, immoral thing that can happen, and it shouldn't happen.
Mr. Burst?
I would just say the tactic about people getting thrown out of their homes is very, very minute. What I would say in my experience in 25 years of government is the biggest thing that hurts the elderly folks is special assessments that get placed on their house because they can't expect that. And ultimately, this Measure 4 does nothing to change special assessments. In fact, I would argue special assessment would be the primary way to function for local government if they lost the property tax ability.
Mr. Burst, this question is for you. Are there potential long-term consequences of repealing property taxes for state-level spending? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's kind of the big debate we're having right now. Really, there's, and everybody's heard this, three or four legs of the stool: sales tax, income tax, property tax, and now, thank God for oil, we have oil tax revenue. The legislature has reduced income tax to almost not being a leg of the stool. Property tax is sitting out there, and oil tax is sitting out there. And, of course, sales tax. If you change any one of those legs of the stool, the other stool leg has to increase or dramatically be changed. It's just a fact. The legislature would have to come up with $3.1 billion, which I struggle to think they could, without any type of massive spending cut, which, of course, some people would like, or increase taxes somewhere else. You're going to squeeze the balloon and it'll end up somewhere else. You have to pick up that 3.1 under Measure 4, plus the legislature has their own priorities too. And that's why this is a concern for the local government.
Dr. Becker?
Can you repeat the question for me?
Sure. Are there potential long-term consequences of repealing property taxes for state-level spending?
Okay.
What are they?
Well, yeah, I think there's long-term consequences, and that is that we are putting the reins on all of this overspending that we have in North Dakota. The increase in spending on a per capita basis is something that has exceeded any other state. North Dakota legislature is spending like drunken sailors. Absolutely. When you look back prior to oil coming into the market here in North Dakota in 2008, we were spending just a little bit less than South Dakota year after year after year. We tracked right along with their spending. Then oil came and our spending shot up. It absolutely shot up. And now we've kind of stabilized out, and our slope, our trending of spending looks the same as South Dakota, except for the fact that instead of spending $50 million less than South Dakota per year, we are spending nearly $2.5 billion more than South Dakota every single year. That indicates we have a huge spending problem. The legislature, despite being alleged conservatives and a supermajority of Republicans, are spending as much as any other group, Democrats or otherwise. They're spending whatever comes in. We have to take control of that. We, the people, are taking control of that. As to the three legs, we don't need three legs. What we need is just enough money to fund the necessary functions of government, and we don't need to have property tax to do that. If we're looking at three legs, tell me how the other states, the nine states with no income tax and the several states with no sales tax, survive. North Dakota can do it.
Mr. Burst, 30 more seconds.
North Dakota essentially has no income tax. North Dakota would be reliant on oil tax, and we all know how commodity prices go. And it's a misnomer to think that you can just tap the legacy fund, because the legacy fund is constitutionally mandated that you can't spend all the money out of there. So you would have to find tax revenue from somewhere to make up that difference. And I doubt the legislature has that ability.
Moving on. What about the housing market? How might Measure 4 influence the housing market and home ownership in North Dakota? And this question would be for Dr. Becker.
Well, it's going to have, I think, a significant impact on it. Because people who are currently living in apartments and would like to move into their first home, this will make it more affordable. That $200 or $300 per month that they would have to put toward property tax, they can now put toward a mortgage. That makes it more affordable. The people that are in their starter home and their family is expanding, they'd like to move to a bigger home. Again, they can apply what would have been monthly escrow of property tax and apply it to their mortgage. They can afford more of a home. So this will cause an increase in housing demand, which will cause an increase in construction. This, in particular, would be very exciting for realtors, for all of the construction trades, if this passes. And I understand that their organizations, the lobbyists and so forth of these that represent these folks, have come out publicly opposed to it. But I can tell you, I've talked to a great number of individual realtors and individual builders, and they know that this is very, very big for them. So I think we're going to possibly see that. We'll see more expansion of housing and building, all the construction trades. Again, this will also incentivize young families to move to North Dakota, which helps with our issue of workforce development.
Mr. Burst?
I would say the one thing I do agree with Dr. Becker on is you put more money in people's pockets, that's a good thing, and they'll probably spend it. What probably will happen, and nobody knows for sure, but what probably would happen is the house prices would go up, and any money that you would receive as a property tax deduct would just go into a hotter market, and you would eat it up on paying for the market. Out-of-state landowners would come in, buy up property, and not have to pay for that property unless there's another thing created, which, again, would be legislative inaction.
30 seconds for a rebuttal.
Sure. Prices for housing are not going to go up because you can easily build more houses. That's what's going to the supply can be built to meet the demand. So if there is an increase, it's going to be small and it'll be transitory. But again, what that means is a booming market for home builders and realtors.
Gentlemen, we've had a good first half hour of debate. It's been spirited, but more importantly, it's been civil, and I thank you for that. We'll break now for the news, and then we'll come back. Welcome back to this special edition of Main Street. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Today we are hosting a debate about Measure 4 that's on the election ballot this year. Should Measure 4 pass, it could effectively eliminate property taxes in North Dakota, but perhaps there are ramifications. Joining us and debating today are Dr. Rick Becker. He's a former state representative and a supporter of Measure 4, and Mr. Aaron Burst. He's the executive director of the North Dakota Association of Counties and he opposes the measure. Gentlemen, we had a wonderful first half of the debate. I expect that to continue. And Mr. Burst, this question will be for you. You each, I'm sure, have looked at how other states tax their citizens. Do you know of examples of successful property tax reforms from other states that North Dakota should consider?
Yeah, that's a great question, Craig. And quite frankly, if there was an easy button for property tax, none of us would be here, including Dr. Becker. There has never been a state that's figured out a way to get rid of property taxes absolutely like this proposal does. Now, again, this proposal would leave the door open for other ways to tax property, but we would have to figure that out at the legislative session. Again, if there was a way we could mimic some state's opportunity to get rid of property taxes, we would have done that by now. It is not easy, which is, again, why we keep looking at other things to lower people's property taxes as opposed to just outright getting rid of them.
Dr. Becker?
Well, there have been many reforms. There are other states that have sort of piecemealed something that seems more palatable to people. California's famous Proposition 13 is one example where it holds the value so long as you own the property. And we've had various opportunities for that type of reform, as I mentioned earlier, introduced in the legislature, but they've all been turned down. And yeah, it's new. I agree. You know, wow, shocking, isn't it, that North Dakota could be the first at something. Other states are looking to this. And yes, we are changing wholesale how we do taxing on a local level. And yes, as Aaron said, we could still tax property in a certain form. But instead of mill levies, which we don't understand, instead of valuations, which oftentimes we disagree with, it is a more transactional way. So the locals still have control. They budget. They tax. These taxes are brought up in public meetings with public input because people understand it and it is more transactional. They have more of a say. They feel more engaged. They're less angry. There's nothing wrong with looking outside the box, and that scares people. It's new. But I think that North Dakota can do it. We are ripe, prime for doing something like this.
Mr. Burst?
Again, I would just say putting all your eggs in the basket of oil industry to pay for this is not a smart strategic play for the citizens of North Dakota. I would also just say property tax can be a little bit confusing, but so are stealth taxes, such as user fees, such as sales tax increases. And so eventually the citizens were going to be paying for this somehow. And sometimes what you dance with is better than what you wouldn't have danced with.
And we continue on. This question is for Dr. Becker. Dr. Becker, what impact would Measure 4 or could Measure 4 have on the long-term financial stability of local governments in North Dakota?
Well, I don't think it will have an impact one way or the other. What we're doing, again, is not changing any funding amount. What we're doing is changing a funding source, the funding mechanism. So if we understand two parts to this measure, one is the state must replace every dollar that is going to be levied here this next month. That must be replaced, no less than that. So we know every single township, school, city, county is going to be held whole. Okay, then they are going to, still being in charge of their budget, they know they need to raise the revenue above the amount the state replaces. And they're going to be able to do that with different types of taxes. Yes, they're new. Yes, they're scary, I guess. But it's going to be more transactional. So because they can continue to raise the revenue they need, and they're getting from the state the revenue they are already raising, there's no loss. So this has no negative impact. It has positive impacts for local officials. It has positive impacts for the state because of the impact to our economy. As Aaron mentioned earlier, great things happen when you leave $1 billion in taxpayers' pockets. They spend it. And so we incentivize people to come to the state. We leave money in people's pockets. They spend it. That's good for Main Street, every street, no matter what size the town.
Mr. Burst?
Just a couple of things to highlight, and this isn't mean to be divisive because I think Rick and I have a respectful relation. But again, $1 billion is not all coming into the state because a lot of that property tax is paid by out-of-state landowners or corporations. That chunk of property tax would be gone to other states. So there would be a significant loss of property. And then again, here's where Dr. Becker and I probably will just never agree on. The funding coming forward after the 2024, to me, is still very problematic because we don't know what that would be. We don't know what fees we're talking about, what system. And so Without knowing that, I'm not comfortable, again, throwing out the whole system.
30 more seconds.
Well, I think we have to keep in mind the importance. Aaron's correct. Not all of the money is going to go in taxpayers' pockets in North Dakota, but the vast majority will. We know that 42 to 47% of property tax coming in non-centrally assessed is going for residences. That's people who live in North Dakota, obviously. We have 32% that is going to commercial. Now, you say, oh, gosh, Walmart and Costco. Okay, sure. What about the other hundreds of small businesses in the state that are owned by North Dakotans? That's going to them as well.
We'll move on. Mr. Burst, this question is for you. How does Measure 4 then propose to fund essential services like schools and emergency services that are traditionally supported by property taxes? What should they consider?
Yeah, well, again, here's where Dr. Becker and I agree. The measure is fairly clean. I mean, you can't argue it. The legislature would have to come up with the 2024 levels. How they would come up with those 24 levels is questionable, whether they have the money, or they might even axe programs that go to the political subdivisions that are helpful. Prairie Dog is the perfect example. I've seen the supporters say you could get rid of Prairie Dog to help fund the measure. Well, Prairie Dog goes to help fund local roads. So where are you going to get that? And again, coming back to the ultimate question is, what do you do in 2025, 26, 27? And that's a question we'd have to have the legislature decide, and your locals would not be deciding that until the legislature decides.
Dr. Becker?
Well, one thing that's important to know is that when the state replaces this, we talk about sustainability. It's important to know that what is required of the state is a flat amount. And every year going forward, the state revenue, the state budget goes up. Yet the replacement amount is flat, meaning it's a smaller percentage. For instance, instead of $1.5 billion per year replacement that we're talking about now, if this measure, say, had passed in 2012, we'd be talking about $800 million. You see, it's a much smaller percentage of the budget. So going forward, it gets easier and easier and easier. Now, where we come up with the money, we have so much money. It's already being forecasted because of sales tax and corporate income tax exceeding the forecast. The general fund budget will have $700 million more than they were expecting. It's unspent. It's available for replacement. The Strategic Investment and Improvement Fund, because of severely under forecasting oil prices, is going to have $1.4 billion of unexpected, unforecasted available money. On top of that, you've got the legacy fund interest and earnings. We've never said you need to dip into the legacy fund principal. The interest and earnings are going to be over $600 million. A portion of that is already being spent, but you've got another $200 million there. And the biggest thing is that the supermajority of Republicans are giving hundreds of millions of dollars away to private businesses and corporations, and that needs to stop. You add all those things together, you easily replace the property tax.
Mr. Burst, 30 more seconds.
One more thing that the bill does, Measure 4 does, is it gets rid of bonding. Schools, jails, courthouses bond for those projects. Under this measure, bonding goes away.
We'll continue on. This question is for Dr. Becker. How does Measure 4 take into account differences in property values between urban and rural areas? And I'll add, what should taxpayers consider the differences between taxpayers in urban and rural areas should this pass?
Well, it doesn't take valuations into consideration at all. In fact, it moves away from valuations. And so it makes things more fair across the board, whether you're east, west, Fargo versus the rest of the world, urban versus rural. It puts everyone on equal footing. It creates an even playing field so that the small communities can compete with the large communities. I would like to go back to what Aaron said. He said this gets rid of bonding. It does not get rid of bonding. I don't know how in the world we can say it gets rid of bonding. It says in the measure that you cannot do general obligation bonds based on valuation-based property tax. Not you do away with bonds. You do away with bonds based on the valuation property tax. Of course, if you don't have valuation property tax, you can't do bonding on it. It doesn't do away with bonding. General obligation bonds are based on the good faith and credit of the city or county, not on a specific property. The city can determine that they're going to pay the GO bond with the property tax, but that's not necessarily exclusively how it's done. So I would love to hear from Aaron how this gets rid of bonding.
Absolutely, because general obligation bonds are funded by value-based property tax. If you get rid of value-based property tax, then you could only look at a revenue bond. But how do you do a revenue bond on a school? What do you have, a child user fee to pay that off? It doesn't work. Revenue bonds work for water bills, for electrical bills, but they don't work for schools or jails.
But I'd like to say you're incorrect there. It doesn't do away with general obligation bonds. By and large, are done with property tax, but they don't need to be. General obligation means it's based on full faith and credit of the city. That means the bondholder, the person giving the loan, is saying, look, I'm going to give you this loan because I know you must, no matter what means you have, you must repay me. This doesn't do away with general obligation bonds. It does away with the most common way to set up the bonds.
We'll continue on. Relative to the question on the ballot, and this question is for Mr. Burst first, have there been specific criticisms made about the clarity of Measure 4's replacement funding plan on the ballot, or do you believe that it's worded fairly?
Well, that's a good question. I would say it's fairly clear that the legislature is obligated to pay the 2024 taxes. There might be some timing questions. I have a number of attorneys that we've had disagreements with, but I think what the measure does is fairly well stated. What the measure doesn't do is the question on where those extra revenue dollars are coming from after you get after the 2024 session.
Dr. Becker?
Yeah, I think it's very, very clear. Also, I want to clarify just how we're phrasing things. For instance, Aaron said 2024 taxes. I want to make sure we understand it's 2024 levy, which means it's the taxes you pay in 2025. And as far as that clarity, here's where we kind of have the rub. The opposition, one of their biggest points is there's no plan. They say there's no plan. We obviously have a plan. It's on the website. We're talking about it here. But these details that the opposition seems to be wanting to hear so desperately should not, and that's why they are not put into the measure. The measure is constitutional. You should never put that kind of detail into the Constitution. The concerns, for instance, let's say the townships right now are only able to raise revenue by levying a property tax. So the opposition will say, see, if this measure passes, the townships are out of luck. They can't raise any revenue. Well, the reason they can is because of a simple paragraph in the Century Code. You don't fix a paragraph in the Century Code by putting something into the Constitution. That's why you rely on the legislature. The legislature in any state at any time knows when you have a constitutional amendment, there necessarily needs to be implementing language put in by that legislature to do the people's bidding when they vote for a constitutional amendment.
You have 30 seconds to respond.
Yeah, I agree. You don't want a 10,000-page bill, but that's why property taxes and taxes in general are very difficult. And that's why it should be more in a legislative process where you can vet things. And again, this is where Dr. Becker and I just will not come to agreement, apparently. You have to have the legislature authorize new taxation for the extra money you need. And without knowing the extra money or the process, we're asking citizens to get rid of their property tax so they could have maybe a user fee at the end of the road. I don't think that's smart policy.
This will be our final question, gentlemen, before we offer closing statements. And Dr. Becker, this is for you. Dr. Becker, you've talked about how political subdivisions will be able to be reimbursed by the state at 2024 levels or more. What about communities or subdivisions that become smaller or shrink over the time? Will they continue to get 2024 dollars, and is that fair?
They will. The language says that every subdivision will get no less than what was levied in 2024. Now, even for communities that shrink, because of inflation, even a shrinking community oftentimes will remain flat or increase more slowly. But is there the possibility that there'd be some inequity such as that? There certainly is. That seems to be an outlier type of concern. I'm not aware offhand of communities that are doing that, but the overall percentage of what we're talking about, the significant relief going into people's pockets, I think that the small amount of a situation like you're referring to really is almost zero impact.
Mr. Burst?
I would just say, actually, it's happening quite a bit. Again, to get into the weeds on this, the Western counties all reduced their property tax levies to darn near zero. They would be punished because they would be at the zero. Now, again, could the legislature come in and give a different formula for them? For sure. But what would happen is you are creating inequity. So if you're going to try to get to the top of the mountain here on what's equitable and what's fair in tax, it will never happen.
30 more seconds. Dr. Becker?
Well, I think when we talk about equitable and when we talk about being punished, I'm hearing all the time about, oh, this county's punished or that county's punished. Who's not being punished are individuals. Every individual paying property tax will no longer need to pay property tax. The amount that they're currently paying, they will be able to keep. They will be able to pay down debt that they owe. They will be able to put it to retirement. They will be able to pay for their kids' braces or help pay for their kids' college. The opportunity here is almost limitless, and I think that's what we need to focus on.
Thank you, gentlemen. Now we're at the point of closing arguments, if you will. And because of the draw we had earlier, Mr. Burst, you'll go first, and you have up to 2 minutes.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Dr. Becker. I always do enjoy talking with you. I don't know, maybe the listeners might not have known this, but Dr. Becker was my legislator back in the day. So it's always been nice to see you and chatting with you. Just my closing thoughts on this. And I come from a court background, and the courts have burdens of proof, and the prosecutor has the burden to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. When it comes to property tax in the current system, I personally think North Dakota is a great state, is well-run, well-managed. Could we get better? For sure. But if you're going to completely change the way that we fund local government, that requires a heavy burden of proof to decide whether or not we should change that. Maybe does a better system come out? Maybe. Does a worse system come out? Maybe. And so I think these very detailed, which reasonable people can disagree on, with very detailed policies, that should be more thought out than just saying you can't use property tax anymore in the current way that we know. And so I think that's why my members have heartburn with this issue. And I think that's why a lot of citizens will have heartburn with this issue, because they just don't know what's going to crawl out of the box. Yes, would it be great if oil continues to produce in North Dakota for the next 100, 200 years? Would it be great if we had money to do this? For sure. Are we going to? I think anybody from the 80s, you can ask them how oil and commodity prices did, and they might be a little more skeptical. Thank you. But thank you, Dr. Becker.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Burst. Dr. Becker?
Okay. Once again, I say over and over again, this is an opportunity. It truly is an opportunity. North Dakota is so rich on a per capita basis. We have been blessed with these natural resources. And we have a situation that most states find themselves, people across the nation, dealing with a tax that really frustrates them, that oftentimes they feel is unfair and they generally do not understand. So why not take a look at that? Why not think outside the box? Locals can raise the taxes, raise the revenue they need to provide all the services they provide, but still move away from a valuation-based, unrealized gain-based tax. This can be done. The neat thing about being in North Dakota is we can make that transition, and we can make it as painless as possible because we are having the state replace what we're currently paying. That means that transition for the locals is very, very small. It's a tiny, tiny portion of what their budget will be. In doing it in that manner, we also get this huge relief. And as I've mentioned, that posts opportunity for every one of us, everyone we know, everyone we love. And we can't give in to the fear of the unknown. We certainly can't give in to a fear that the sky is falling approach. This is opportunity. We also can't give in to envy, saying, well, you know what, we're gonna take a pass on this great relief for ourselves and everyone we know because there's this guy over here, this boogeyman, this Walmart. We don't want them to get a break. You know, and then, of course, go and shop at Walmart. But what we need to do is focus on the positive, what it will do for us, our families, our loved ones, and all of North Dakota. And this is a one-time opportunity. I think we need to be bold. We need to go forward. And yes, oil money, does it rely on that to a degree? Yes, but everything we do in the state right now relies on oil money. We know oil is going to be around for decades. It's a matter of what we do with it.
Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you very much for having a good, positive, informative discussion. My sincere thanks to Dr. Rick Becker and to Mr. Aaron Burst for participating in this informative debate. I think both of my guests would agree on the importance of getting to the polls and voting on November 5th.
You just heard an encore of the debate on Measure 4, a voter initiative aimed at eliminating property taxes in North Dakota. Former legislator Dr. Rick Becker argued in favor of the measure, while Aaron Burst from the North Dakota Association of Counties argued against it. The debate originally aired on October 23rd.
Hi, it's Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
If you believe in the mission of this station, but now's not the right time for a financial gift,
donate a vehicle you don't need instead. It's easy to do, and it could mean hundreds of dollars in support.
Learn more on this station's website.
Just go to prairiepublic.org, open the support tab, and choose vehicle donation.
Welcome back to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Dr. Erica Berg leads the Bison Strides program at NDSU. Bison Strides is a program that's accredited by the Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship International, and they are hosting a special event this Saturday for veterans. Dr. Berg, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure to visit the NDSU Equine Center. There's always a lot going on, including an event with Heroes Compass this November 2nd.
Yes.
First of all, remind us what Bison Strides is.
Okay.
And then we'll get into the event that's coming up.
Okay, sure. So Bison Strides is an equine assisted services program that is run out of the Department of Animal Sciences at NDSU. And Bison Strides really embodies the land grant mission of NDSU through teaching, research, and outreach programs. We have four programs, and we serve individuals with disabilities as well as veterans and military folks. We partner them with horses to build strength, resiliency, and independence.
And that kind of folds right into your work with Heroes Compass.
Yes.
Which will be part of this event on the 2nd.
Yes, yeah. So Heroes Compass is a local nonprofit, and they're dedicated to empowering military veterans, police officers, firefighters, and first responders by providing support and community to those individuals overcoming challenges. And they do that through a variety of programs. And so we're excited to partner with them for this event on Saturday. And so they're going to be there and providing some snacks and some treats along with Cass County Veteran Services.
And so what will happen here at the Equine Center?
Yeah, so we have an open house between 9 and noon, and so folks are able to just come whenever works for them. They don't have to stay the entire time, but they are certainly welcome to stay the entire time or just kind of come and go. But we'll have a table set up to kind of register folks and then give them some opportunities to interact with the horses and just to kind of talk about what Bison Strides programming is for our military and veterans horsemanship, and then also give Heroes Compass an opportunity to share what their services are, and then also provide an opportunity for folks to get in touch with Cass County Veteran Services because they'll be representatives here as well. So
drill down for me a little bit more on really how can veterans take advantage of what is available here?
Sure. So we have two programs. Two times, I guess I should say, during the week. So our Friday mornings from 8:30 to 9:30, we have available for veterans and military folks to come out and work with the horses. And then we also have a Monday evening time from 6 to about 7. And so during those sessions, folks are learning horsemanship skills. They are learning to connect with the horses, learning to be mindful and present with those animals. Horses really demand that you be mindful. You know, they weigh 1,200 pounds, they are a prey animal, and so their survival depends on reading the environment around them and the behavior of everything around them. And so they're very in tune to what we're thinking, feeling, doing, how we're behaving. And so that can really give people an opportunity to kind of recognize in themselves if they're feeling anxious, distressed, not paying attention to the horse. The horse's behavior changes in response to that. And then it helps us to just be more mindful, to calm down a little bit, and then to be able to work on those horsemanship skills.
What if I've never had any experiences with horses at all?
Yeah, that is great, actually. Everyone is welcome. So if folks who have mobility challenges, no horse experience, we have many different ways that we can accommodate individuals. And again, we have some folks that have horsemanship experience, some folks have never touched a horse. And so everyone is welcome to attend for sure.
And this program is not just a one-timer. This lasts the entire year.
Sure, yep. So as long as people want to be involved, they're involved. And I also should mention that there's no charge to the service member or their family for the Veterans and Military Horsemanship Program that we hold each week. Those programming costs are subsidized through grants and donations.
We were here about a year ago when mm-hmm. we hosted you on Main Street. And if I recall, you had a veteran who was kind of helping you as maybe a volunteer.
Yes, yeah.
Do other things for the program.
Yes, and I thank you for bringing that up. We also have opportunities, many different volunteer opportunities. So we have actually a couple guys that come out on Wednesday mornings that help with our physical and occupational therapy program. They help get horses ready, groom horses, just kind of whatever Jesse, who is our program assistant, needs them to do. We introduce new horses into the program, and so they'll sometimes work with them, which is very important because we need to have a kind of continual string of solid horses to participate, and some of them age out. You know, some of them have different things that maybe don't allow them to continue. And so having our veteran volunteers come and work with those horses is essential for program success.
Remind us one more time, where can you be found?
Yes.
And what is the event this Saturday?
For sure. So this Saturday, it is open house for military and veterans, and their families are also welcome to come from 9 to noon. NDSU Equine Center, which is at 5140 19th Avenue North in Fargo. We would love to see you, love you to come out and kind of check out the barn and visit with Heroes Compass, visit with Cass County Veteran Services, and just see what Bison Strides has to offer you.
Thanks for joining us again, Dr.
Yeah,
Berg.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Erica Berg from North Dakota State University. She leads the Bison Strides program.
Whether you're a sustaining member or you give annually or you've made additional contributions to Prairie Public, we thank you. Your generous support invests directly in the programs and services you and your community enjoy and depend on. Thank you, Prairie Public members. We're humbled by your trust.
And that's a wrap for our debate week and this Thursday's edition of Main Street. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central, we'll air The Middle with host Jeremy Hobson. And at 7 p.m. Central, we'll air Science Friday. Until then, I'm Craig Blumenschein. Thanks for listening.